with the relationship stuff and barbell, just like strength training, because neither of them are like instant gratification. Like you feel good if you have like a good conversation with a kid, or you kind of break through for a moment, or you can help them in some way, or you have a good training session, or like you PR or something like that. But the real like impactful things take a lot of time.
Nick O'Brien, 10 plus years of skin in the game, currently at Jacksonville University, assistant SNC coach, director of sports science, wink, with a major stop at Fresno State along the way, plus I don't even know how many other things, D1, D3, pro athletes, high-level college athletes, national championships, a national level, Highland Games, and strongman competitor himself. I don't know how you fit all that muscle in under 200 pounds, but that is impressive, sir. How are you doing today?
Good, man. I appreciate that. You weren't lying when it was a fire intro.
Short, sweet, to the point. But welcome to the Talking Shop podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tometz, and I'm here to share stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. I'm joined by Nick. I already gave that little fire intro, but we are recording for round number 3. So I guess that brings me to how we know each other. So I hosted a few episodes for the Samson Strength Coach Collective podcast, and I was asked to host a few episodes. And Nick was my second or third, I want to say, something like that. And then we kind of just hit it off. We've stayed in touch ever since. I was on the Strength Game podcast. We will shamelessly plug that at the end. But if you are a coach who competes yourself, it is the podcast for you. So now this is round 3 on TSP, my podcast. So is there anything I missed kind of going through where you've been and where you are?
No, man, you pretty much hit everything. Yeah, I think this is school 7 for me. I don't know how many moves I've done before coaching and now as a coach, like being a military brat, but I mean, loving every second of it. It's fun. It's a fun trip. Now you hit it right on the head.
You've definitely seen all parts of the country, growing up in the Northeast, spending 4 or 5 years in Cali, and then just casually moved to the other coast now in Florida. So a guy who's been there, done that, like I said, over 10 years in the game. So I'm excited to hear these stories, lessons, and experiences. So we will get into it. So looking back, kind of what was the first fork in the road moment, or kind of that first story where if you had taken a left instead of a right, all this would be different right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like kind of what if stories. Like if you would have chosen something different, the whole path kind of would have been completely thrown on its head. But I think like the biggest one that kind of sticks out for me was like really getting into coaching. I had no idea what I was going to do. I didn't know strength conditioning was a profession. I think like a lot of people, I think you were kind of in that same boat as well. Mm. Like weren't really sure that this was a legitimate thing that you could pursue. And originally kind of wanted to follow like my dad's footsteps and get into the military. But I've always wanted to be at least a little bit better than him. I'm losing on the education front too, because he's got a second master's. So I think the only way I can beat him now is not to get a second. I probably have to go for a doctorate. So I don't know. Dr. Nick
Dr.
sounds cool.
O'Brien. Yeah,
I know, but I don't know if that's in the cards. So I've always wanted to try to beat him, and he went into the Marine Corps. He's still in right now as a Mustang. So he was enlisted first. So when I originally wanted to go in, I was like, well, I got to go to college, because I just want to go. I want to be an officer right away. And at the time I was still looking at like Marine Corps Recon or Marine Corps MARSOC and some, kind of their special units. And I was originally disqualified just because I have terrible eyesight, and or at least discouraged not to do it, because I could sign and enlist and get actually involved and then not ever be allowed to pursue that. So then I did follow the college route, and I had started kind of shadowing an athletic trainer at her community college, which was like, I could walk to it, and they had a good program, and a lot of kind of bounce back D1 guys would end up going there. And I liked it because I could still stay involved in sports, and I was not really any good at team sports at all. That's why I picked up all the dumb strength sports at the end, because I could train by myself and then have to be associated with the team or live and die by someone not being as committed as I thought I was. So I went to school though, and then realized that I did not want to be an athletic trainer, and found the weight room and found Coach Nine and was able to kind of intern right away at Salisbury, like where I started coaching. So I still think about it. If I'd choose the military route, if that would have been completely different, but I mean, I still work with a lot of military guys now and like still kind of associated. My brother went in the military, and my other brother is still trying to actively get into it as well. So it's still a big part of my life, but I know that if I would have made that decision, it probably would have been completely different. And I probably would have never found coaching.
It is interesting where it was almost kind of made for you. And then looking back, it's like, that was the biggest decision, but it also kind of wasn't really a decision.
Yeah.
So do you remember any of those conversations? Because your family just has that obvious tie to the military, but was it straight up, you just took their word for it? Or did you chat with like your dad and he was like, yeah, I found out the best idea? Or like, how did it come to you just saying, this is my decision? That's it.
Honestly, I don't even remember at this point. It was it's kind of like the biggest regret I don't regret, if that makes sense. And it's probably the biggest thing I don't regret, because I really love coaching, but I do love the military population. And I think at one point, yeah, I'll probably take the full plunge and go to the tactical route and start working with those guys as much as possible. I think it fits kind of like my background and how I've been working. And I think it does tie into like my coaching philosophy and a lot of the kind of principles I lay out for the teams that I work with. But that conversation with my dad kind of, he didn't want to push me into it. I don't think he wanted to push any of myself or my other two younger brothers into it. I think we all just kind of being associated with always gravitated towards it. We had that conversation a few times. I think I kind of kept some of it a little bit hidden from him. Same with my brothers. We were always pretty competitive. And like I said, I wanted to beat him at a lot of stuff. So I felt like if I told him exactly what my intentions were, I was going to lose for some reason. It just kind of came down to, he kind of pushed a little bit towards college just because he didn't really have that opportunity. And then I think he was five or six years into his enlistment was when he actually went back to school. So I figured I would kind of learn from his sort of mistake and just go the college route right away. I didn't do ROTC or anything like that just because it felt wrong. It felt kind of weird to me because I grew up in it. I didn't want to do like the half version of it. I was either all or nothing. And it seemed kind of like a weird kind of halfway point. And that's why people always ask me why I didn't do that. I was like, I kind of lived and breathed it all the time. I had a buzz cut since I was like 5 years old. Me and my brothers looked exactly the same. Same haircut, like at the military barber all the time. We wore the same clothes. Like we put my dad's uniform on. It was always the same. So I didn't feel like doing any of those things were right. But yeah, he didn't push us or anything like that. It was always part of just the house in general.
So then what does your fam think about that big red beard you got for my listeners who are just listening?
The whole family has it.
Let's go.
My younger brother, my middle brother, he's probably the same. The youngest doesn't because he's still looking to get in. The middle one spent 5 years in the Marine Corps and then he didn't re-enlist. Yeah, so right now he's a welder. So the beard works perfect for him. And I know that there's a slight chance that in the future I'll go bald and follow his footsteps. So might as well let the hair grow and let everything go out as long as I have the opportunity.
Exactly. Definitely have to take advantage. But based on hearing about your family, I can only imagine what those Thanksgiving Turkey Bowl football games are like. Oh, my gosh.
The weird thing is they never played sports.
That was
the other thing, too. Like, never got pushed towards sports at all because neither of my parents played sports in high school whatsoever. I think my dad started working when he was 12 or 13. It was a weird – it was a weird household around there. But yeah, then get pushed towards sports. We tried a little bit of everything, but every 3 years we moved. So it's hard for us, like a mom, to be with three young boys and my dad be deployed overseas and try to drive and pay for three kids to play ice hockey in North Carolina.
True.
It's true. A little too expensive, a little too far. So we switched sports all the time, but we never really got stuck in anything forever because none of our parents were really married to playing a certain sport or even like forcing us to at all.
Yeah. Interesting. Two quick follow-up questions and then we'll move on to the next one. Best and worst place you've lived.
Oh man. I don't know if I want to burn those bridges. I still go back to some of them. Just
the city. It's not personal. It's just the city.
Oh, the city. I would go. Sorry. Baltimore is probably going to be
the worst
a little bit, but I think just from the location I was at, and I was bars on the windows, construction truck in the back that never moved, played a game of how many mice can I kill in a winter because the siding is not very good in that apartment. Just some wild stories that probably couldn't share on here that actually happened in that apartment complex. I'm sure Baltimore, I know Baltimore in the Inner Harbor is great. And a lot around like the schools that I worked at, like at Loyola and around the Hopkins area and Towson area, but specifically where I lived, no thanks, not again.
And then best place.
It's kind of hard to beat my hometown. I'm really enjoying my time like here in Jacksonville and around the Annapolis area has always been nice. Around the Naval Academy where I lived before. I lived in actually both Jacksonville's, Jacksonville, North Carolina and Jacksonville, Florida. So that was confusing a little bit, actually getting down here, but, I really like my hometown, like down in San Diego area, Oceanside to be specific. It's just pretty chill, low key beach vibes, good food, good waves.
Sounds like the place to be for sure. And then last question on this topic very briefly. So besides what the listener would probably guess that you have taken away from growing up military, having worked with that military tactical population previously, besides just like the military style or dictator style, whatever cliches, what are one or two things that you take away from that, that you implement with your college athletes that probably the listener wouldn't guess? Just one or two things.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the discipline side of it and just kind of the preparedness are the biggest things. But I think the big misconception is like the dictatorship sort of thing. I think there's a hierarchy and you kind of know what it is, especially in like college athletics, like the head coach is going to be the highest ranking person that you're going to deal with. And like athletes are probably like on the very, like they're the privates, they're the sergeants, they're everybody at the very bottom. But everybody works together and everybody's on the same common goal. So it doesn't turn into a dictatorship and that's not how I try to run it. And I don't try to run my teams like militaristic. I think that maybe just how I carry myself and how overprepared and OCD I am for training sessions and for all the things that I have to deal with my athletes ends up looking like it more, but to me, that's just a well-oiled machine, and that's just how the stuff works in the best way possible. But I try to avoid that as much as possible and let athletes have a lot more feedback. So I would say that's kind of the biggest misconception, just like people that have never been around the military or never had anybody involved in it or associated with would kind of see it as like everybody does the same thing, everybody looks the same. But I mean, if you look at a college team, you look at a professional team, a high school team, they're already doing that. They all wear uniforms. They all have the same name on the front of the shirt. Like they do stuff the same. They line up the same. Like there's still a lot of characteristics that carry over. I think it's just a big misconception that they're robots and they have no say in the program or they have no say when they come into the weight room. And that's not the case at all.
Because you know that other extreme, you're conscious of not letting it get to that point, but I'm sure that how you carry yourself has a positive impact, kind of rubs off on everyone along the way. So very, very cool. Next, the coolest slash craziest story you have thus far. This is kind of my staple question. So I asked you way back when, I don't even know when that was, like COVID. That was definitely over a year ago, but
I think
the coolest, craziest story you have thus far.
I was thinking about that, and I think I shared one. I forget which one I shared last time, but I was thinking about, like, honestly, maybe not the craziest story, but the craziest, like, for me, like, misconception of college athletics and, like, kind of over my coaching career was when I got into it, I was at a Division III school, like, tried to play, didn't work out, started coaching everything at Salisbury. And for those that don't know on the East Coast, or like specifically like lacrosse too, Salisbury is a powerhouse. And on the men's side, I've won 12 national championships. On the women, I've won 4. Like, Coach Nestor and Coach Berkman have been there forever, it seems like, since like the program was founded. And when I started coaching there, I think in my time working with the lacrosse programs, we never lost. One of them never lost in the 5 years that I was coaching there. So like the women won in 2010, then the men won back to back 2011, 2012. And then the women won in 2013 and 2014, like my last 2 years. So I thought that's just how was the program was run. Like, it was kind of crazy. We can never time it up where both teams would win. And even unfortunately last year, the women won and the men lost in the championship in overtime. So I don't know when the last time they've actually been able to both win at the same time and really like claim dominance on the D3 world. But after that, I thought that's just how a program, like that's how a program wins. Like, you're just successful if you do these things. And that's kind of how I tried to carry out the program going forward. But after that, like, nothing against the rest of the teams, but I had my first losing season leaving Salisbury. Like, I got to Loyola and like the guys were great. Everything was great with the coaching staff and stuff, but it was just, I don't know if it wasn't a different level that changed it. It wasn't the different players. It was just, to me, it was, everything was different. And it was the first time that we had lost. And like, to me, that was crazy because I was so used to constantly, all right, we're in the playoffs, kind of almost guaranteed. We're winning the conference championship. It's a coin flip. It's probably guaranteed. Like, we're going to be in the championship. And like all those things, like, I really wish that I would have understood a little bit sooner that none of that stuff was guaranteed, and really took note of all the things that we were doing, like all those habits and non-negotiable things that we were doing. And I still look back and on them, but I wish I would have known sooner that this is not normal. And so to me, that was crazy, but it wasn't one specific story, but it was 5 years leading into the next kind of 5-6 plus of my college coaching career. Was this is not normal, and to be successful, to win championships, you can't be normal.
Winning is not normal, you know, like, of, I don't even know how many teams, how many, like, we'll just say March Madness, what is there, 100 whatever, 200 D1 teams? Only one team wins.
Like, I think there's like 360.
Something like that.
More than that.
Yeah. There was a quote that our baseball team used to always talk about. It was like this huge paragraph, but it was like, winning is not normal, you know? But that's tough that was your first main experience. So you didn't know better.
Nope.
But I'm always curious, like, my little D2 baseball career, like, there's schools like University of Tampa, University of Southern Indy, where it's just like, they're just always, they're not at the College World Series, you know? Or I interviewed at this university and the women's tennis team basically wins it like almost every year. And it was funny. I was chatting with the head strength coach at my interview, and then like the women's tennis coach just like walked by. So he was giving me a tour and they kind of just chatted about the girls and what's the S&C plan for the next week. And then the strength coach goes, yeah, in a few weeks, you know, once we get into the end of the semester before the spring season, I'm going to ask him and be like, hey, what do you think? And he's basically, the head coach is either going to be like, we got this or we don't, which basically means we're going to win it all or we won't. And it's like, how can you be that sure slash like just you're at a point where you can just predict if you're going to win it all or not before the season even starts. I think that that's just nuts. So I guess next, the follow-up question, because you had that awesome 5 years, you've spent time under Ron McKeefer, who obviously is very good at what he does at Fresno State, but then also some of the other places along the way. What are those commonalities of those legit winning programs?
Yeah, I think it's really the people. It's really the people and the culture that's kind of that surrounds them. I mean, obviously I've been at 7 schools. I've worked for a lot of great mentors and a lot of great like head coaches and assistant coaches. And I mean, the leadership there that is pretty awesome. I mean, at Salisbury too, Matt Nine was strength coach of the year as well. I know McKeefer ran it twice, but like all the guys at Georgetown, like taught me a lot of stuff. I mean, they're pretty much mostly still there. They're impacting in some other way if they're not still at Georgetown. I mean, they're a highly successful program, even if it doesn't always show up on the field, like what they're doing in and out or what they're given, they're doing great things. So, I mean, even from the time, like working with the staff that I am now currently, like I think everybody, if everybody's pulling the rope in the right direction, you're doing something great. And it's nice to be part of programs where everybody wants ultimately success for everyone else. And everybody's bringing their own thing to the table. Everybody is willing and most of all, like humble. And there's not egos when they go into a room. We can talk behind closed doors and actually like get down to business and try to improve. So those are the kind of the big things that really like stand out, and obviously not micromanaging and not doing all those things that kind of take away, but having backing from leadership, backing from admin and your head coaches who are bought into the program and let you do what you're hired to do, I think really helps a ton.
What's it like that first meeting of the next year? How have the coaches typically managed that?
Like coming off a championship or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh man, I heard one of our director of sports medicine here, he was talking about it. He's been in the profession for almost 3 decades at Jacksonville specifically. And just honestly, I don't know everybody athletic training wise. He knows everyone. And he's good friends with one of the Alabama athletic trainers. And he told me a story that he was one of the last people with Saban, like riding back in a car, like after they had won a national championship. And it was pretty quiet in the car. And Saban just kind of looked at him and was like, man, we just won a national championship. And like, it just hit him in that moment. And from what everybody says too, like he takes that moment to really just kind of like soak in it. And then the next day he's right back to work. And I think a lot of the programs that have been successful, we just got right back to work. And it wasn't like, we kind of knew, you have a feeling when the team's going to be successful, but at the same time, you're not expecting that success. Like there's an attention to what you do, but at the end of the day, like after it's done, it's kind of on to the next thing. Like it's business as usual. And I think a lot of good teams like debrief at the end, like talk about what was successful, what was not successful. Obviously, like in any of the college realms, you're going to lose some people too. Like you're going to lose key members of your staff. So you can't just sit there and replicate what you did the last year, because you're going to have different pieces. You're going to have different athletes. You're going to have different coaches. It's a different year. It's a different schedule. There's so many different like compounding variables that are completely different that you just can't copy and paste stuff. Because if everybody was copy and pasting, they would copy and paste who won the national championship last year, do the exact same thing, do it exact same way, and then you would be successful. But that's not the case. So, I mean, back to, like for some of those teams, like the Salisbury teams that won back to back, like that was the case. And I know even on the losing side of it too, I think it was 2010, we had lost. We lost to Tufts in the championship. I want to say it was that year. And all we did every day on the whiteboard was just write the score. There's no context to anything. We just put the score on the board, no names. Everybody knew exactly what those numbers meant. And then the next year we played them again and beat them in the championship. I mean, it was pretty poetic how it works out. It usually doesn't happen that way, but I know that that driving force like helped, but coming off a successful year is even more difficult because everybody's hunting the number one person. It's a little bit different to be hungry and actually try to go forward. So having like being humble, realizing that sustained success is more difficult than just having a flash in the pan success. I think those coaches have been there forever, and any coach that has success that year that really sits back and evaluates every single thing and is super critical of what happened, good, bad, indifferent, and involves everyone in the process, has done really good things continuously, not just that season, but going forward. And then learning on those mistakes definitely has helped.
What was the score of the game?
The second game, I think it was 6-9. I want to say we lost 6-9. And then I can't remember the other score. Now I'm getting old, so all everything blends together. Like I'd have to sit back and even like think on all those things.
So every day, just 6-9.
Pretty much.
No words. but I think that's super interesting. And it makes total sense about it. You can't just copy paste because everything is different. You know, you have seniors that left, freshmen that come in, different schedule, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess you have nothing to do but get back to work because everything's different. So very interesting and makes total sense kind of how you phrase it. So that was awesome. So second to last question, last big one. So the biggest kind of full circle thing you're most proud of, or just like kind of like Nick Saban when he took that moment, just like, whoa, that was cool. What was kind of the biggest thing for you when it took you a sec to kind of sit down, but once you did, you were like, dang, that was sweet.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I would say this one kind of ties in with like solidifying what I wanted to do as a career instead of like that fork in the road and picking coaching and kind of more or less stumbling upon it because I really didn't know that's what I wanted to do or really didn't know that this was possible. But I took an internship. I was able to secure an internship at Georgetown pretty much like within my first year of interning at Salisbury. Sent out some terrible DVDs with even worse hair than I have
DVDs.
Now. Yeah, DVDs.
Oh my.
And like letters and like, I think sample programs and stuff too. And I sent them to a bunch of, top programs, like lacrosse programs that I wanted to work with, coaches I had tried to talk to and reach out before, and they had gotten back to me. Luckily I cut my hair when I started my internship, which was a good thought process. And I think they valued that a little bit more, but selfishly for me, that like payoff moment was coming back after working with them. I'd worked with them in the summer, but I worked with the men's lacrosse team along with some other teams, but then primarily in the off season, in that fall, like for that 2011 season. And I think I came back to watch a game during like spring break when I was at Salisbury. And I remember the game and everything. I kept like the tickets and stuff too, because I didn't know at the time it was going to like mean as much as it did, but watch them play there against Mount St. Mary's at home at Georgetown. And I remember standing outside the game, like as they were walking in and like the guys were saying like, what's up to me, and like saying, what's up, Nick, as they were like going into the game. And like some of them stopped and said hi after the game and talked to me for a bit and everything and kind of thanked me. And honestly, I had no idea that the guys were going to remember me. It had been almost 3 or 4 months like to that time, like from when I left in December and they went home from break, and I hadn't been working with them for that time because I went back to Salisbury. So I really thought they just thought I was an intern and like, oh, we'll get another intern again. And it just kind of repeats the process, going back and forth with that. And it was cool to be able to like kind of get that recognition just for them to remember and to watch them play. And I mean, the relationships that I had with those guys, only being able to see them like really when they were lifting and when we were doing conditioning or anything like that, it was just kind of momentary glimpses, but it was cool to get the feedback from them. And it really solidified like how what kind of coach I wanted to be and like how important those relationships were with those athletes, to see that they actually kind of cared that I was there and that they remembered me. Honestly, that was pretty big in my eyes. But really, like, outside of that too, like the big payoff ones are just like, now what I try to carry out with everything is just the relationships that I've developed with all my athletes. Cause it's really cool to see now, like, I've got players that, cause I have male and female teams all the time. Some of them come out of college and get married or have families and stuff. And I've seen them kind of grow up. Even one of the freshmen that I had at Georgetown is now a coach himself over at UMBC. So it's cool to see that, like, college for them, even though we think, like, you see college football on TV or you see college basketball, or you see some of the big sports and, like, everybody treats them almost like professionals since they're on TV and it's bigger than everything. But when you really take a step back, like, college for a lot of kids and for the majority of kids is like the best time of their life. Like, they might meet the person that they're going to spend the rest of their life with. They're going to have families. They're going to go off and be good citizens. They're going to go off and be doctors or maybe play professionally. It doesn't matter. But to them, that's super important. And the relationship that I build with them, I think, is the coolest piece. It's awesome to watch them, like, be successful and play the sport they love. But I mean, I'm going to treat them the same way, regardless if they're the number one player or the number 60th player. It doesn't matter. So that was really cool to kind of see. It made me super proud just to kind of be a part of what they had done, a part of, like, their life for a little bit, and just kind of be proud to be a coach. And I think at that point I was happy with my decision after kind of like that fork in the road. I was like, I didn't know if I could do this, sustain it for a while. But that really was like, all right, this is cool. I could keep doing this for a while.
It is cool when you do get those kind of moments of affirmation that, like, you are making an impact and that you are being received well by the athletes. And it seems like those moments kind of almost happen when you need them. You know, like, when you're feeling good about your coaching, like, that stuff doesn't really happen. But when you're like, you know, like, this is tough, or you're going through a hard time. But it's funny how that works out. But with those college athletes, like, if you're 4 years of their 22 years of existence, it's almost a fifth of it. Like, that's a decent amount of time. And in the private side, it's cool. So now that I've been full time actually coaching for like a year and a half now, and I've coached summers before, but like, there was a mom client of mine, just an adult that just works out. She would, like, send me pictures of her family on Thanksgiving all dressed up, you know, like, she went out of her way to think about me to, like, you know, the Halloween pictures, the Thanksgiving pictures, or one of my, like, 11-year-old athletes, who's like the twitchiest 11-year-old I've ever met. I take zero credit to her success. The dad would, like, send me pictures of, like, her with, like, a trophy and stuff, you know, or, our customer service, director of customer service, Vicky, will, like, kind of catch up every now and again whenever we have to hop on the phone, and she'll be like, oh yeah, like, little Johnny, his mom said that he loves you, you know, like, he loves going to TC Booth. And I'm like, I never would have guessed that. Like, you know, he doesn't really seem like he's super, super into it, but it's cool to get those kind of affirmations that you are making an impact, because coaching to them, you know, like, if they have a 20-hour week, well, you'd be in a pretty good situation to get, what, 4 or 5 of those hours in college, about, right? And then in season, it's probably even a little less. So the fact that, relatively speaking, to their entire hours of college athletics, it's less, but there's just something about iron and something about just the relationship that's not on the field that just, like, goes a long way. So I bet you were just sitting in the stands, you're like, they remember me? It's a cool story.
It was pretty cool. I mean, and I like that with the relationship stuff and barbell, just like strength training, because neither of them are like instant gratification. Like, you feel good if you have like a good conversation with a kid, or you kind of break through for a moment, or you can help them in some way, or you have a good training session, or like you PR or something like that. But the real, like, impactful things take a lot of time. and like some of the things, like you said, just kind of passing on a message, like from like a parent about their like son or daughter, like to you, like that affirmation stuff. Sometimes you don't get it. Sometimes it's someone else, like it's a coach saying, hey, this person said this about you. You don't really hear it from the person directly, and it usually doesn't come for a while. So you can't really expect to hear it instantly. And I think the payoff for that is even more impactful, because usually it's like years down the line. And you're like, oh man, I can't believe that, because now you're hearing about it years later. So it's still making an impact, even if you're not directly involved in their lives, or you're not directly doing it anymore.
That probably is one of the key factors, that it is not an instant gratification thing, that relationship is not built on these things where I help you get quick, immediate success, or you become a stud at lifting overnight. But it's that, just, I call it the accumulation effect, if you want to call it compounding interest, whatever kind of buzzword. But just every day, it's consistent. You're working towards this goal together. It doesn't show up on the scoreboard right away or the bar right away, but that's probably the biggest factor kind of going into it, is you just have all of this time of just consistently kind of depositing. So a very good way to put it, for sure. So last question. We are all about getting better on TSP. Obviously, we are practitioners. Even though that this isn't X's and O's, we still have to be good at what we want to do or what we do do. So if you had to give the listener one question, whether it's a note on their phone, a sticky note put on their mirror, whatever it may be, that you think that they can just remind themselves on a daily or weekly basis to get better, what would that question be?
Yeah, I would say, are you holding yourself accountable? I look at it a lot, and you could throw motivational quotes and inspiration and kind of being in the right state of mind all around. But really, if you're in the profession, like, you can lean on people as much as you want. You can lean on coaches. You can lean on other people that you're inspired by and kind of bounce ideas off of. But like, when you hang up the phone or you leave their weight room or you go somewhere else, like, it might still be in your like right frame of mind. You might still be, it might be fresh in your thoughts, but it's going to slowly have a half-life and that stuff's going to disappear. So really, it takes some personal accountability and some discipline on your side if you really want to put that into action. And if you're going to put it into action, you better have some goals that are actually set in place so that you can actually like do that. And for me, like, I try to make it as black and white as possible. Like, did I do it or did I not? Because I tell my athletes all the time, we're either getting better or we're worse. There's no real like neutral ground, at least in training. I've kind of come to terms with there is some neutral for some stuff, but I'm not going to tell them that. But yeah, I would say that, like, just holding yourself accountable. Like, if you say that you want to do something, make sure that you're doing it. And then if you say that you want to actually achieve something, then set some goals for it and break it down so that you can actually have some bite-sized chunks and then work on it. Like you said, compounding interest or whatever else you want to call it. Like, you have to take some daily action steps towards that. And then you have to hold yourself accountable to those things. I think it's been difficult. Like, I mean, obviously you don't want to lean on yourself for everything. You want to lean on other people, but realistically, the person that should care about your success the most is yourself. And if you're not going to be your biggest critic, your biggest advocate, like your biggest supporter, then no one else is going to be. And like, on the flip side of that, that's the same thing I tell the athletes. It's like, if I want it more than you, it's like, we've already lost. Like, I can't help you. So if I don't want my success more than myself, if I don't want to hold myself accountable to obtaining these goals that like I set, no one else set them for me. Like, I don't have to do a lot of the things that I do, but that means I need to hold myself accountable for it. Otherwise, why even set them in the first place? So that would be kind of the big thing that I would say. And then just really just set some actual action steps and daily objectives and things that you can do that are like non-negotiable to actually try to get on a routine, set some good habits so that you can be accountable more often.
I like how you describe that, because I think that there's a lot of value in kind of going to the flip side and kind of envisioning that. So it's like, not how bad do you want it and are you accountable? It's like, well, am I supposed to take you there? Am I supposed to, you know, if I'm talking to an athlete, am I supposed to take you there? Am I supposed to want it more than you? Am I supposed to define your own goals for you? So when you kind of frame it, because stuff is very black and white, you do or you don't. Now, what those two options are, or I guess what the do option, that's a little gray. But once you figure out what that option is, it's either you did or you didn't. So I think that that's a good thought experiment of kind of like, well, let's say we don't hold ourselves accountable, then who will? You know, let's say you aren't your biggest cheerleader. Well, then who will be? Because someone's got to be, right? So kind of just to give some perspective. But yeah, the smart little green dude said, do or do not, there is no try. So I think that having, and then I also like what you said about motivation, that there's this half-life, and I'm sure everyone else has watched a movie and they're all motivated. They go to bed, they wake up, and then they're like, I feel nothing now, you know? So having that like very clear end goal, a promised land of, did I at least take a step towards that today or not? And either you did or you didn't, you know, and it's not, I'm motivated and enjoy those moments when that motivation is there. But if you felt that motivation all the time, then that would just be your normal, kind of like we chatted about earlier. But just having a simple reminder, did I take a step towards there today? If you're motivated, great. You got five in. Oh, you're not feeling that good. Can you just take one? I think that would be super impactful.
Yeah, exactly. I think you can hold on to that motivation, like you were saying, but you need to at least evaluate yourself too and understand, like, if, and be critical if you actually did take a step forward or not, because motivation is great, but like I said, the state of mind you're in is really going to have a big, profounding impact on how motivated you're going to be. So that stuff is great. I'm all for people being inspired and being motivated by people or sayings or quotes and stuff, but it means very little if there's no action. And then it's great to have action, but then the step beyond that is, can you repeat that action? That's why, like, for me, great, use the motivation, use the inspiration, all right, put it into action, not just words or a poster on your wall or whatever it's going to be, and then actually carry that out on a consistent basis. That's what discipline looks like. And then after you do it for a while, it becomes normal. It becomes your routine. And then you can kind of take it a step further. The same was like that black and white, like, did I do it or did I not? Like, if you're not going to have any gray area with it, eventually that needle moves to where, did I do it, is a different standard than what it was before. And that's where you can still be black and white with it and say, yes, I got better. Yes, I got worse. But for you, the standard just got raised a little bit more. So now you're taking bigger steps in the right direction, or you're taking bigger steps in the wrong direction. It's compounding interest again.
Fantastic. No need to try to rephrase that. So we made it through the gauntlet of TSP's questions and my follow-up questions and whatnot. So now I want to say thank you, sir. And I'm rolling out the red carpet for you to shamelessly plug, emphasis on the shameless, everything you got going on and where we can get more of Coach No Bryant.
Yeah, it's pretty shameless. Yeah. So like you said, I do have a podcast, the Strength Game Podcast. Really talking to people like yourself, coaches that are on both sides of the profession, both as athletes and as competitive athletes, like athletes and coaches, because I really think those are the coolest people to talk to that really have skin on the game on both sides. And that's been fun. I took a little bit of break, obviously moving cross country again, but we'll get that back and running soon. We got you on the show, which is awesome. I appreciate that. CoachO'Brien.com. And then I'm on social media, not super active. It has to be very thought out. That's part of my goals, which I'm failing at the moment, taking a step in the wrong direction. But want to say it's N_OB, just knob. You'll probably find it. it's a play on my word, not a knobber or anything, but my email, anything, you can find it on Jacksonville's website, anything like that. All the contact information is on my website in there, but.
Fantastic. All of that will be in the show notes below. I'll get all those underscores and whatnot correct. So that is where you can get more of him. And as we illustrated over the last 50 minutes or so, Nick has been a lot of places, seen and done a lot of things. He's a guy that knows how to talk the talk, but also he's walked the walk as well. So a valuable resource for any coach, any athlete that is looking to just learn a little bit more about just the career and how to navigate themselves. So thank you again, sir. And I'm looking forward to maybe round number 4. We'll see where the future takes us.
I look forward to it, man. It'll be fun. Thanks for having me on.